This episode of the Backside Ground Balls podcast is presented by The Performance Academy. For all of your athletic training needs, train with purpose at The Performance Academy. TPA houses a number of training resources from private baseball and softball instruction to team sports performance classes. Utilize advanced technologies like Output Sports, HitTrax, and TrackMan to take your game to the next level. On top of our elite staff and advanced technological capabilities, be a part of the TPA family and take advantage of the many resources our facility has to offer. Want to go to a game? How about a concert? How about going to see classical music? Whatever you're into, there's only one place to get your tickets. And thankfully, we are partnered with SeatGeek, the essential resource for live events. For any of your ticket needs, make sure you go over to SeatGeek.com and use the code BACKSIDEGROUNDBALL to receive $20 off your first purchase. Again, that is SeatGeek.com. Promo code Backside Ground Ball to receive $20 off your first purchase. We are super excited to announce that we are now partnering with Routine Baseball. For all of your clothing needs, athleisure, the sickest baseball gear you can get. We're talking hoodies, shorts, sweatpants, sunglasses, hats, any baseball style you can imagine, Routine Baseball has it, and we are now partnered with them. All you got to do is go to routine.com/backsideground ball. That's a mouthful, so I'm going to say it again. It's routine.com/backsideground ball and check out all the different options they have. You will receive 10% off your order today. One more time, routine.com/backsideground ball and get 10% off your order today.
Welcome back to the Backside Ground Balls podcast. Super excited to be back here on the pod. My name is Trevor Powers, and I am joined by my co-host, Dan Galati. Dan, how are we doing on this fine Wednesday evening?
I'm doing well. For our audio listeners who can't see, Trevor is much further back, and I'm wondering if I should be, should I be scooting back, or is that what we're...
That's what we're going for. You know, we got a little bit, we're getting upgrades in technology. We're getting upgrades in the stuff we have. It only stays in the Powers Oganowski household. Apparently it doesn't get up to the Galati residence. So I'm decked out with the nice microphone. Next thing you know, I'm going to have a nice recliner and chair stocked up here. And I'm really going to start to treat this thing like a true comfort.
The only thing we don't upgrade to the behest of our listeners is internet.
Yes, we spend more money on cameras, microphones, and everything that we have except for internet. We still continue to scrounge our way through monthly payments of Spectrum. Now, give us credit with the fact of the matter that Spectrum's the only option we have around here. So we're not going to ask what level of Spectrum you pay for or I pay for, but Spectrum is the only option around here.
That's the, it's funny though, because I caught myself last time, like forgetting that, you know, Riverside records separately. So like it's perfect on our ends and then it gets put together post-production. And every time you would like freeze up on me, like there was like four times last episode where you were saying something and I like had a counterpoint to what you're saying. If you continued down the path I thought you were, you would freeze and I would lose you for a good 45 seconds. And my body language, like it was bad body language day for me. So I'm going to work on it this episode.
Yeah.
We'll see how many times you freeze. But I'm going to try and be better. I'm going to try not to have bad body language, especially if, like for anyone who does watch us on YouTube.
Yeah, shout out to our YouTube followers.
They probably think I think you're an idiot sometimes or something. Because that's how it comes across. Like when you watch it back, it looks like I'm just like disgusted by what you're saying. Because the connection's fine on the YouTube video. But what I'm seeing, I can't hear the guy.
It's tough. Well, I appreciate the fact that you're not actually disgusted with the things I say. I hope that we have enough of a on-air rapport that even if you were disgusted with the things I said, you would just respond back and let me know that you thought I was an idiot.
Yeah, we went fish glass here. Yeah, but here's the beauty of what's happening right now is if you go fish glass with the new camera, I can't quite tell because of the connection that we have. You're blurry the whole time since we started recording. So for me, it's no problem.
Okay, well, that's good to know. That's good to know. Let's talk a little bit about college baseball. Let's take a trip around the country. We did have some notable midweek results. It was a very big upset week for a lot of top teams across the country. We're going to start in the state of Virginia, where Old Dominion took down number 10 Virginia 7-4. UNCW came up from the shore, and they played Wake Forest at DBAP up in Durham. They won that game 8-5. Coastal Carolina came up and ended UNC's, Dan. Did you know UNC was 23-game win streak at home? They ended that yesterday. That's a pretty impressive run for the boys.
Very impressive run for the boys, and part of what's made them kind of so good, and we had talked about them not losing to teams they shouldn't, and they've just been so dominant at home that's kind of why when you had looked at Carolina's record, it is what it was because they were taking care of business in Chapel Hill.
Yeah, 100%. They win home games, and they will have a test, but it's going to be on the road this weekend as they take on NC State, little cross-city, cross-town rival heading down to the Doak. Mercer, they handled Florida State. Florida State's got a big weekend this weekend as they travel up to Winston-Salem. Looked like they were already on their first flight up to Winston-Salem Airport as they lost 13-6 to Mercer. UAB beat Alabama. Alabama was coming off an impressive series win against Arkansas. Heading out west, Grand Canyon took down rising number 21 Arizona. Arkansas, in a tight one, beat Texas Tech 9-8. Dallas Baptist beat the red-hot Oklahoma State Cowboys. Kentucky continues their great start to the year. We're going to dive a little bit more in depth about the Wildcats today as they win 17-3 against Louisville. East Carolina went into extras with William & Mary with a 14-13 midweek win in 13 innings. And lastly, number 7 Duke upsets Gardner Webb 2-1 for Pups in the Park. The Dogs came up to Durham as a heavy favorite, depending on the betting service that you use. And number 7 Blue Devils came out on top. We love you guys at Gardner Webb, so we were really disappointed to see the upsets. Dan, two things out of that. I'm going to let you comment about the Dogs there. Since you were there, you were our resident podcaster on site. But do you miss a midweek 14-13, 13-inning game on the road at all? At all?
There is nothing worse than that. I was once a part of a Tuesday, I think it was March. One of our loyal listeners was there. I'm sure he'll correct me. I was once a part of a Tuesday midweek, I think it was March, about 40 degrees, winds blowing straight out, 20-14, 21-14 football game. I was charting that day. I think I charted 716 pitches at least. It felt like it. It was miserable. One of the worst games I've ever been a part of. I was cold. I had to write way too much. So no, I don't miss those. There's nothing worse. Midweek baseball is amazing because I feel like there's no other sport really where you get just kind of the setup of everything, right? College football, obviously, you're once a week. So, you know, that's easy. You're ramped up every game. I feel like basketball, you don't play non-conference games in the middle of the year, right? You play all your non-conferences in the beginning, and then your midweek mm-hmm. games are conference games for the rest of the way.
Like the CAC.
Soccer's sure. Sure. That's, we can't get through a pod without a CAC reference. Soccer and all those other sports, same thing. Like you get, and you're just playing conference games even when you're playing midweek, you know. Baseball, you have these random non-conference games where I was thinking about this last night watching because Gardner Webb went full staff. I mean, nine arms. I think they ended up 9 or 10 arms they ended up using in a 9-inning, or I guess they only threw 8 innings. So I guess they used 9 arms, something like that. Whatever. Like you show up to this game and it's like you it's almost an exhibition. Not really. They're important and you need to win them and you want to win them, but you don't have one of your guys going. You're throwing 8-9 arms sometimes. You're throwing guys that you don't have full faith in. It's just the, like one of the most unique things about college baseball. And because obviously, like, if you ask any of these coaches, they'd rather drop – like, if you asked any coach, I feel like they would rather drop these midweeks and win their conference games and win every single conference series and drop every single midweek along the way, and they wouldn't care, right? Now, mid-majors, it's a little different because RPI and stuff, but if you could guarantee a conference win, series win every single weekend and a loss in every midweek, I think every coach in the country would be like, we'll take it.
You just came up with Florida's strategy to get through this season.
Well,
they were going to attempt it. See, no, you backed up on that.
No, because right Florida, away. Because Florida, yeah, because Florida, I'm not talking about, like, I just guaranteed a win in every single conference series. Florida's playing 18 and 17 ball. Before we even got into conference series, Florida was dropping games they shouldn't have. So that's completely different.
Fair. I'll give you the benefit of the doubt there, even though that's the 2-2 that we were making fun of. They were winning conference
series. They
were,
but recently they've just lost.
Yeah, no, 100%. You knew it was going to catch up to an event. Good teams win baseball games. Like, I know we're not coming up with anything that's just groundbreaking on this podcast.
That's why we're the number one podcast right there. That exactly. is it right like, there. Do you need proof of why we're so good? Good teams win games. Book it.
Book it, clip it out on social media. We're going to really push to make Backside Ground Balls the voices of college baseball with comments that are just deep analysis like that. But ultimately, good teams just handle their business each and every time they're expected to handle their business. It's the compliment that we give to North Carolina. Every time they've played somebody that's competitive or on the same level of them, they have to bring their A game to win those games specifically. But more times than not, when they're playing an opponent that they are superior of, they win and they sweep and they win at home and they take care of business. They don't have many hiccups, which, again, when we talk about coming into playoffs, that's when it's really going to matter because, again, you can't afford to lose a midweek to Jacksonville when it's a regional on the line. And then you have to fight tooth and nail out of the loser's bracket with your number two going on the mound or however you stack it up. Like, that's where seasons are lost ultimately. But again, handling your business, I'm not going to say midweeks matter that much, but seeing the results again. Shout out to East Carolina. You shouted them out on the last podcast when we were recapping as a team that you think could win it all, and you're going to ride that backside ground balls curse through it. But they squeak by a William & Mary team that is a nightmare to play because they have a ton of dudes that can pitch it. They do a great job on the pitching development side, and they get out of there with a 14-13 win, and I bet the boys were buzzing on their way back from Williamsburg, and that's all you can ask for.
Yeah, it helps a lot when you win those road games that are marathons.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
If you can win them, it makes the bus ride and everything feel a lot better. And it's a completely different feeling. But getting the win kind of, you know, winning cures all, as they say.
Oh, 100%. So let's get into weekend 10 across college baseball. There's a couple series we're going to highlight. There's a lot of really good ones, quite frankly, across the country. Now that I'm sitting back, Dan, I just realized now everybody can see my hand gestures that when I get rolling. If anybody's listened to any of our interviews that we did with Coach Greg Mamula, Coach Brian Torresani, Coach Tom Walter, I am a very big hand ask question. So I just realized that as I saw myself on the screen, I was like, geez, this is going to be something that I'm going to get some feedback on.
Yeah, that's all right. I think the people will be used to it.
Like, that's fair. You
know, it's normal. I feel like it's not a wholly unique thing to you. I feel like there's a lot.
No, it's definitely not.
I'm typically a hand talker. I hit the table a lot. Sometimes I catch myself.
Yeah. When I'm fired up, tapping the table and talking with my hands when I'm jacked up, those are usually the go-tos for me. So let's head to said Winston-Salem, North Carolina, where the Demon Deacons are going to be playing host to the Florida State Seminoles this weekend at, as I go fishbowl here for anybody. There we go. We're back. As the Demon Deacons play host to the Seminoles of Florida State, this is going to be a really fun series, quite frankly. In my opinion, I think it's going to be the most talented pitching matchups. You're going to see a lot of high 90s velocity, specifically on Friday night, is when I'm pretty sure the series kicks off, Friday night in Winston-Salem, as Chase Burns, who we all know and Cam Leiter, who not as many people know, the redshirt or the true sophomore transfer from the University of Central Florida, will be facing off. And then obviously Jamie Arnold with Josh Hartle, and then whatever teams want to throw out there on Sundays. Just going to be a really impressive pitching matchup. I guarantee scouts are going to flock to that Friday night game because you're going to get a look on one of the top potential arms in the 2025 class, and obvious the Chase Burns that we all know. But Wake Forest was rolling. They had a great stretch of play against Virginia Tech. The vibes were starting to come back. Nick Kurtz on Tuesday night against UNCW hit his 14th home run in 10 games. He's back. He's one of the best hitters in the country. But in the stretch of the last couple games, they've dropped one on a walk-off to Boston College, which was a series. Everybody, again, you're going to be happy about winning the series, and that's all you expected to do in conference play. But then they drop a midweek to UNCW, and it doesn't feel like it's the same vibes that we had coming out of the Virginia Tech weekend and into the midweek last week that we're carrying right now.
This is kind of it for Wake Forest, in my opinion. Like, this is the series. This is the weekend. This is, like, we're now deep into April. We're running out of opportunities. You're talking about, I think they have 4 or 5 series left. And you get a Florida State team who, the last kind of marquee matchup we saw them on the road, they struggled at Clemson. So they can be had. Now, this Florida State team's really good. So this is your chance, Wake Forest, to kind of take back the season. Everybody's kind of watched you underperform expectations. There's been so much talk. There's been, you know, Michael Massey injury, Hartle struggles, Cade Rowland, Kurtz injury. Like, it's been a lot of not kind of how it was mapped out to start the season in January when we were down there, and all the hype and kind of like we had talked about the feeling around that program when we were there. But this is it right here. You go out and you win this series against a very, very good Florida State team, a Florida State team who kind of has, outside of that Clemson series, has been just, you know, has been one of the best teams in the country, has been one of the best teams in the ACC. This is your chance to kind of set the tempo and you know, one of the old cliches of the postseason starts now. We're not quite at that point. This isn't, you know, this isn't a loser leave town, but this is kind of, I really like this opportunity for Wake Forest to say, hey, you know, we're playing much better ball. We kind of have things righted. We've righted the ship. We're healthy. We feel good about it. And to me, like, one of the keys to look at, what's up, Brady? You agree with me? I appreciate it. One of the keys kind of for me is Josh Hartle against North Carolina, 4 2/3, 2 runs, 7 strikeouts. It was a loss, but better than what he had been doing. Virginia Tech, 4 2/3, 2 runs, 8 strikeouts. Boston College, 5 2/3, no runs, 8 strikeouts. He's starting to look like the Josh Hartle that we expected, right? So that can be a massive swing piece for him to come out and be the guy that everyone expected and was talking and had first round buzz coming into this year. That can really, you know, Chase Burns, him, Massey's continuing to throw the ball. He's getting healthier. Like, I just like this. Like, this is a huge spot for Wake Forest. I like it. And hopefully they kind of are up for the task.
Yeah, 100%. Let me ask you something about Hartle. It's something that when I was doing, you know, not a deep dive per se, but kind of trying to formulate my thoughts on what his struggles have been. And I basically came down to the fact that it was glove side fastball command. Because you want to know who he reminds me a lot of in terms of professional baseball? You just want me to throw it out there? Patrick Corbin. Yeah,
I was thinking Blake Snell a little bit, but Patrick Corbin makes sense as well.
Because it's not an elite fastball. It's more run and sink than it is ride and hop. It's not an elite banger breaking ball. It really comes down to the fact of how well can he command it to the glove side to righties. And again, because that's the inside part of the plate. And then obviously that sets up the outer third, because then he's able to work that cutter slider combo off of those. And that's when he's at his best. And that's where he gets his strikeouts. So he's not like, it's one of the backwards things, that it's one of those things where like guys in college typically dominate with their fastball. Chase Burns, Cam Leiter, Jamie Arnold, guys that we're going to see this weekend, Michael Massey as well. Hartle's almost different in the fact that, yes, he needs his fastball to set everything else up, but he almost is better off when his off-speed stuff is on, but it's all determined by that fastball. What do you think in terms of what you've seen from Hartle, if that could be something that I could be on to there?
Yeah, a couple things. I think, one, I think that's kind of the key for all left-handed pitchers, right? Very rarely can left-handed pitchers survive without being able to command fastball glove side, just because the majority of guys you're facing are right-handed, right? So you have to open up the inside part of the plate for yourself in order to use all of your pitches, especially to righties, right? To open up the changeup away. Guys can't lean on it if you're making them uncomfortable in. You can tunnel the slider off of it back foot, you know, in the dead zone if you are able to command the heater in because they're on guard for it. It opens up everything. And that's, again, that's the majority of guys you're facing are right-handed. I mean, you can even throw Hagen Smith in there. Like, what makes Hagen Smith so good? Obviously, it's a funky slot. It's 98. The stuff's ridiculous. All of that is correct. But Hagen Smith, to his glove side, is ridiculous, right? If Hagen Smith couldn't command the glove side with the fastball slider combination, he wouldn't be as effective as he is. I think not only for Hartle has it been glove side concern, it's been everything. I just think it's been command all over. And even when he is throwing strikes to the arm side, throwing strikes to the outside part of the plate, throwing strikes with the secondary stuff, it's not commanded strikes. It's a lot of balls up in the zone. It's a lot of balls out over the plate. He's been very hittable, and he's walked, frankly, like the walks have been a little bit sporadic. You know, it hasn't been a ton, but it's you know, three against Virginia Tech, three against Boston College, three against Louisville, two against Duke, two against Dayton, and only Dayton is Dayton's the only one where he's gone six or more. Sorry, Louisville and Dayton. So of all those starts with multiple walks, only two times he's gone, you know, three times through the order. So, you know, three walks and 4 2/3. That's not kind of the quality you expect from Josh Hartle. That's not the quality you expect from a guy who's a frontline starter. So I think, yes, command overall. And if he can start to command the baseball better with his stuff, that's what opens up everything for him. I mean, that's the name of the game for all these guys, obviously. But when you don't have the power swing and miss stuff, right? If Chase Burns wasn't 101 with a 92-mile-an-hour breaking ball, upper 80s breaking ball, he wouldn't be as effective either because he doesn't – I wouldn't say he's a command guy. He's got this exploding stuff that looks for like a strike, and you have to make your decision so early that he gets swing and miss.
Yeah, and even, I guess, to build off the Hartle point as well, is I think part of the things that I've come when I talk about it is the fact of the matter that his stuff isn't elite enough to not have as good of command, right? So when he's not precise with his fastball command or any command, quite frankly, his fastball is not explosive enough that guys just swing at it. Like, again, even games that Chase Burns has not had his best command, guys will still give him so many strikes just because they'll expand the zone. Where he gets hit, Hartle does a lot of times, he doesn't generate swing and miss because he has uncompetitive misses and nobody chases, nobody goes crazy against it. And then when he does happen to miss over the middle third of the plate, it's more hittable stuff. Like, again, like, and that's not to discredit what Hartle has in terms of stuff. It's just, it's a lot harder to be successful when you don't have a Michael Massey fastball or a Michael Massey slider or a Chase Burns fastball or Chase Burns slider, that when those guys get 2-0 or those guys get 3-1 or those guys go 0-0, right? And they just say, here it is, hit it, right? Middle, here it is, hit it. They have the stuff to just be like, pound it, right? And if they get beat, they give up a home run every so often, cool, I'm good because I'll attack again. Hartle has to be more refined because his stuff isn't 97 to 99 with explosive life on the heater.
I think that's exactly right. I think you just nailed it on the head there. Yeah. Like that's exactly. Like, because you're not going to get the chase that you get with the guys who have the better stuff that honestly just overpowers. And we had this conversation a couple weeks ago that overpowers college hitters. And as you move up in levels, you don't get the chase. So you better be able to command the baseball.
Yeah. Let's talk about the team that they're going to be facing in terms of their lineup. As an offense, we've highlighted certain guys nationally for the Florida State offense, and we talked about how they were the parallels with Clemson when we previewed and recapped that series. Where that series was won was in the depths. Clemson was able to flex their depth offensively. Clemson was able to flex their depth in the bullpen. They went down early, they clawed back, and they exposed what we would deem as Florida State's flaw, their depth, right? Bullpen depth, and even I would say to a certain extent, offensive depth. As a team, right now, they're hitting .332, slugging .581, .420 on base. They got 68 bombs on the course of the year. But in those numbers of .332 is really impressive as an offense. You have .411 from Cam Smith and .410 from James Tibbs, who are two of the best hitters in the country, right? I'm not saying it completely falls off the map there. They have a couple guys that have showcased some abilities. Jamie Farrar has 11 pumps on the year, hitting .315. We know those guys that we like specifically that have a ton of power. Marco Dingus has 9 home runs on the year. But nobody else is putting up those all-American level, all-conference level numbers that Tibbs and Smith are. And if you can do a good job of handling those two, you're probably going to put Florida State's offense at bay, at least for certain stretches of time.
Yes. I think the interesting thing when you look at this matchup is what Wake Forest, especially in the big series that we've seen them in and struggle in this year, Duke, Virginia, UNC off the top of my head, is they haven't been able to neutralize enough those big guys. The depth guys haven't necessarily beat Wake this year because obviously we know the talent of their pitching. But, you know, when it comes to matchups with Wake starting pitchers, it's, you know, Chase Burns against the middle of the order, Josh Hartle against the middle of the order, the guys that do the most damage in these lineups. And to me, it kind of feels like, and someone could fact check me on this, I don't have numbers in front of me, I might be wrong, but to me, the feeling is like guys like AJ Gracia and Casey Cook were kind of winning those games for when you saw Wake Forest lose. So can Wake make the adjustment and keep Cam Smith and James Tibbs and Jamie Farrar at bay this weekend? And that might be the difference, like you said, because if you keep those guys at bay, if you go into the weekend and you know, if you're facing them with no one on or they're not coming up with runners on, getting the back-breaking hits, you get them out in those spots, or you pick and choose your spots, which, you know, Wake, we know they're going to have a good plan. It's all about execution. If they can do that, then they will be positioned. But for Florida State, I think one thing you are positive about is the fact that the middle of orders have given Wake a lot of problems this year. You know, you looked at the Duke series going in, you're like, well, can they neutralize AJ Gracia? Can they neutralize, you know, the middle, the heart of that Duke order? And they weren't able to do it. Same with Carolina. Those guys kind of tore them up a little bit. So if you're Florida State, you go in and you feel kind of good about that matchup and you feel like those guys can rise to the occasion. The one caveat being in all those other series, Nick Kurtz wasn't Nick Kurtz. He was out and he was just getting back for the Carolina series. I believe that's when he came back. So he wasn't quite him. Now we see what he's doing. So maybe even if no one else on Florida State does it, the heart of their order can't answer because Kurtz just out-homers all of them. Like at this point, honestly, it's a possibility that he just puts – like they get just enough starting pitching, they get just enough from their bullpen, and Nick Kurtz is like, all right, boys, let's go.
Yeah, and he has the capabilities of doing that, and I credit you right there, professional podcaster. Your co-host goes off screen for a little bit as he tries to work some technical things, and you just continue to ramble. I could tell you were at your last breath for a couple seconds there, like, what am I going to keep talking about? I was like, I got to hurry on my end. But, yeah, 100%. Nick Kurtz can very easily take over a series or any game at any given moment, and I think if you're Florida State, you're taking a big old gulp wishing that you faced him in early March rather than right now because he's on an absolute heater. And that's going to be one thing. But the guys that are going to be able to put him in a tough position, Jamie Arnold specifically is the name that I have circled. Cam Leiter is a guy with the stuff to dominate any lineup in the country. But numbers-wise, he came out of the gates hot. He struggled a little bit. On the year, he's pitching to a 4.63, 56 strikeouts in 35 innings, which is just really impressive numbers from a strikeout standpoint, 22 walks. That's not the Cam Leiter you're going to hope and have coming into this weekend and expect to win that series and keep Nick Kurtz off bet, you know, off the scoreboard and not hitting homers like he's done all year. Jamie Arnold is the guy, right? Like Jamie Arnold is the guy that they need to be an ace. Looking at how the pitching staff, I'll be interested to see what the report is, because it looks like Cam Leiter hasn't thrown in a couple of weeks. So that obviously is a hit on their depth, honestly. But Jamie Arnold has been unbelievable. It's a low lefty slot, 1.32 ERA on the year. He's got 78 strikeouts, 12 walks in 54 innings. He's a guy that can neutralize any hitter in the country. But I think from a matchup standpoint, again, we've seen Nick Kurtz face the toughest of the toughest arms in the country. I think Arnold's about as tough as a test as any in terms of being able to go left on left. And if Kurtz gets him, then you just have to tip your cap, because that's just a guy on an absolute run.
Yeah, here's Jamie Arnold's two worst starts of the year. At Boston College, 7 innings, 5 hits, 3 runs, 2 earned, 9 strikeouts, 1 walk. Home against Miami, 7 innings, 4 hits, 3 earned, 2 walks, 9 strikeouts. Those are his two worst starts. He's that good.
Mm-hmm. He's going to make a lot of money here soon. That pitching rotation next year,
I mean, goodness.
I know they're losing Tibbs and Smith, but that pitching rotation next year, whew. I mean, I love Cam Leiter as much as anybody, because of the stuff, because of the frame, because of the projectability. But Jamie Arnold's a guy that present stuff just through the roof and just has the capabilities of dominating hitters. And if you get those two rolling at the right time next year, that's not going to be a team anybody wants to face. Let's head over to the SEC, Dan. I'm not going to ask you to handicap the Wake Forest Florida State series. I think we've already tried that enough through this year. But I think it's going to be one that's going to be really fun. A lot of high velo, a lot of good stuff, and it's going to be a test of obviously, like we've already talked about, the depth. Wake Forest dealt with their bullpen problems early in the year. They look like they're starting to figure it out a little bit with the additions of Cole Rowland being able to be healthy, and then David Falco has been really good as well. And then Florida State, who knows, definitely going to be on the lookout to see if they can continue to stack wins coming off that midweek loss. In a top five matchup in the SEC, we got the Kentucky Wildcats playing host to the Tennessee Volunteers. Tennessee is coming off a series sweep at the hands of the reigning national champion LSU Tigers, and Kentucky has been the darling of the season, sitting at 14-1 in SEC play, playing really good baseball, and has been a lot of fun to watch. This is one that I'm super intrigued for, because say what you want about the Kentucky Wildcats, they've played the Ole Misses of the world, they've played Mississippi State, they've played Alabama, they've played Auburn, I think, if I'm not mistaken, maybe they haven't. They haven't been tested to this point, right? Tennessee, we saw what they did last week. We saw what they did against that LSU team. We saw them leave the yard. We see what this offense is capable of when they're absolutely rolling. This Kentucky team, they haven't been tested to this point. They've earned their way to the top five in the rankings, but the reality is the season starts now, because it doesn't get any easier as they start to hit the SEC East gauntlet coming out of this weekend.
Yeah, this is your Lane Kiffin series of the weekend, right? Get your popcorn ready. Like, this is the one that everyone should be tuned into.
Bro,
this is
did you just come up with that on the spot?
No, I did.
I'm writing that down.
We're 9 weeks in, but this is – look, we're always getting better.
The Lane Kiffin, get your popcorn ready. Game of the series of the weekend. That's great. He would be all in if we started pushing that out there.
I think he would. The juice would at least buy in. But yeah, I'm hoping this is kind of what it reminds me of the Florida State Clemson series, right? Where it was like, mm-hmm. I just want to see fireworks. And we got it. We got the fireworks. And I'm kind of hoping the same thing, especially when you look at kind of how these teams are constructed. There's a lot of offense on both sides of the ball here. And I know you'll want to talk about the pitching at some point, but for me, it's just everything goes to the offense. You know, both teams hit for a ton of power. Both teams hit for high average. Both teams put a ton of pressure on you. And Kentucky kind of feels like a team right now that, and I mentioned this last week, it feels like a team that doesn't know who should be better than them. It doesn't, you know, they don't know that they haven't been tested, because they just play with so much confidence. And we talk about, like, they go handle their midweeks. They just continue to clean up an SEC play, and nobody saw it coming. But the way they're swinging the bats, the way they're playing the game right now is awesome. And here is their first test. We know this is their first test. They get a Tennessee team who, honestly, like you said, this is a team that could very well be national champions this year. I would very well expect them to be back in Omaha with the offense that they've built. We talked, you know, for a long bit on Sunday show about how it seems like Vitello at this time of year knows how to pull the strings. They start to settle their arms into roles. So it's one of those things where, like, you don't – because Kentucky's kind of a new – you know, new kids on the block, and this team has kind of come out of nowhere. You don't know what to expect when they get tested by a Tennessee, what it's going to look like. So you just kind of sit back and you just hope that you get kind of the best from either side here, and you're playing a bunch of wild games.
Oh, I would bet that it's going to be wild. I don't think Kentucky's park plays as small as Lindsey Nelson plays, so that definitely plays a role. But what this offense does, and again, we could sit here and we could laud the five guys that they have with 10 plus bombs on Tennessee. And that is not necessarily the offense that Kentucky tries to bring to the ballpark, which is ironic because if you remember in 2019, I believe it was, they had one of the best offenses in terms of the power department in the country. And then just for whatever reason, as the rest of the league zigged, they zagged, right? And they went into this kind of all in on, you know, we're going to bunt, we're going to run, we're going to play good defense. But that doesn't mean they don't have guys that can invest. Fact hit, right? Ryan Nicholson, he's sitting at 11 bombs this year, hitting 312. The transfer from Cincinnati, Ryan Nicholson is. Nick Lopez, transfer from USC, hitting 403. A little bit less on the power department, four bombs, 14 doubles though. Ryan Waldschmidt, that's a good one. 13 for 19 on bags for the year. We got a couple other guys in double digits and steals. So they seem to be an offense, and this is something that we really probably don't have to get into the weeds of, but they seem to be an offense that really understands identities of individuals. Again, you see guys with 20 attempts, you see guys with 24 attempts, you see guys with 16 attempts on the year, and then you see other guys with 2, 3, 3, 6, 9, like in the middle range. This seems to be a coaching staff that really just takes what their guys do well. Hey, if you boogie and you can run, we're going to get you on base and we're going to let you run. Right. We got Devin Burks, who's hitting 235 with 14 for 16 on stolen bases. Right. Like if you're hitting 235, you're not on base a lot. And then you just happen to be second on the team in stolen bases and probably up there with some of the nation's leaders in terms of percentages as well, going 14 for 16. So I think that's the most impressive part when we talk about this Kentucky team is the fact that they really seem to understand what individual offensive players' strengths are, and they really put their offense around nine guys, each being in a position to be successful, which I know is one of the hardest things to do when we talk about building an offense.
Yeah, and you're talking about a team that averages almost 9 runs a game, right? And that tells you something. Like everybody wants to see the long ball in today's game, and it jumps out, and we have more of it at the college level than we've probably ever had since we switched to BB Corps bats. But Kentucky's offense, like you said, they have a couple guys who are in double-digit homers. They have a bunch of guys who have double, you know, almost or have double-digit doubles, stolen bases. Look at their strikeouts to walks. Like, they don't swing and miss. They put the ball in play. And like you said, it feels like an offense that has a true identity, right? This is almost like I don't want to take anything away from Kentucky or change the subject because we haven't talked about it much this year, but like, this is what you want to see out of Arkansas's offense. Like, okay, you don't have guys that are just true superstars in the middle of your order who can carry you. So build an offense that's dynamic and, you know, has an identity, and all nine guys play a role and know what their role is. And that's kind of what Kentucky does. And they just constantly put pressure on you. And again, when you have nine guys who know their role, They know the offensive identity. They know what's being asked of them. They're not going to swing and miss a ton, and they're playing with like the most confidence they've ever played with. It's dangerous. It's really dangerous, and that type of team can beat anyone. Mute.
The mute button got me. Yeah, no, 100%. And when you're confident, I think this was the best point that you made when you started talking about Kentucky as a club. It's like confidence is intoxicating, right? Like that's the big thing. And we see this at all levels of baseball. But I think the biggest level that you see it is college baseball. College baseball, you can have a confident group of guys that can literally ride an absolute good week of baseball into 4 or 5 weeks of a win streak. Like the best clubs I've been a part of, you've been a part of really good clubs as well. Really, the differentiator between them and any other club that you've been a part of is just the confidence level that you accumulate after one or two wins and how the teams carry that. that. Like, again, like in college baseball, it's big. Like in MLB, there's so many games. They play 162, and there's so much talent that of gaps between teams, and you have teams that are rebuilding that, like, sure, the Pirates can have a good 2 weeks, and I don't need to get you started on a Pirates rant right now, but the Pirates can have a good 2 weeks, but that doesn't mean they're going to make the playoffs. That doesn't mean they're going to win a World Series. In college baseball, there's genuine truth to the fact that if you're a freaking confident bunch, you could ride it all the way to a super regional championship, all the way to Omaha, and you could look back at that club and there could be zero big leaguers, there could be zero guys. And again, I'm not saying that this team's not talented. I'm not trying to take anything away from them at all, but it can show sometimes how unranked teams coming into the year. And again, they had a couple transfers that definitely plays a role into it. You didn't know what this team was going to be coming into the season. But when you have those question marks about a club coming into the year, but then they just seem to blow out what your expectations were, a lot of that can be just flat out confidence. And when you talk about Tennessee, they never lack for confidence. So this series is going to be a lot of fun because both of these teams definitely are riding hot. Tennessee just put up 20 runs in a midweek. Kentucky just put up 17 against a really good program in Louisville. I don't know at what point do we stop calling Louisville a really good program. Maybe that's an off-season discussion there, because the Louisville that we grew up with in the 2010s is not the Louisville right now. But still, it's an in-state rival that Kentucky handled their business to. And trust me, they've probably taken some lumps to that Louisville team in the past. And both these teams are going to be riding hot. And the energy this weekend is going to be a lot of fun come Friday night as they kick it off in Lexington.
I also think it's going to be fascinating to see how both teams handle themselves. Because you would expect in a series like this, there's going to be a lot of roller coaster opportunities, right? And who gets too high, who gets too low, how they handle themselves. We know that Tennessee in the past has played with the chip, has played with the, you know, the flair and the, you know, kind of stepping outside the confines of what you might want to see and, like, you know, starting some stuff and talking some stuff. And it'll be interesting to see how Kentucky reacts to that. And honestly, how Tennessee handles themselves throughout the weekend. Because again, when you're looking at these two teams and how well both are playing, you expect there to be highs and lows, you know. But the thing is if you get out to a 7-1 lead early in this series on either side, and you're talking that stuff, just know that, you know, that other side isn't going to feel defeated because of how well they're playing, because of how much they trust each other and the confidence that they're all playing with together. It could be 8-7 real quick. It could be 7-6 real mm-hmm. quick. So it'll be interesting to see how both teams kind of handle it. And it will Kentucky kind of give it back to Tennessee when, if Tennessee, you know, because especially on the road where you're feeling kind of like an animal cornered in, because that place, I'm sure, in Lexington is going to, you know, they need a distraction after Coach Cal left. So I'm sure those people are going to be out in full force this weekend. They're starting to buy into this team. So Tennessee's going to have a little bit of an extra chip. It'll be fascinating to see how they handle it. It'll be fascinating to see how Kentucky handles it.
So let me ask you a big picture question here. What does Kentucky need to do for you to buy in? I'm not saying you're not bought in, but to truly buy in to this could be a national championship team, or have they already?
No, they need to, you know, and we talked about it on the last part, you know, the five series that they have remaining, Tennessee, South Carolina, Arkansas, Florida, Vanderbilt, they got to prove that they can pitch it at a level, especially when it comes to starting pitching. You know, these guys don't have, their top guys don't have bad numbers by any means, but they don't really have, you know, you got Dom Niemann's pitching to a 340, Mason Moore's pitching to a 345. Absolutely nothing wrong with that. The thing for me is they need to prove that they can pitch it at a high enough level to shut down, to beat, and win a series against an offense like Tennessee, a team like Tennessee, a team like Vanderbilt, Arkansas, obviously, where you're going to have, we know you have to hold the Arkansas offense in check because that's the only path to victory against Arkansas because you're not going to score a ton of runs with them. So for me, it's as we move through these final five weekends, and a great first one to start with, an offense that is as explosive and as dangerous as Tennessee, to be able to kind of hold them in check and get good starting pitching, I think to me that'll kind of really finally swing me around to be like, okay, this team can be standing at the end.
Yeah, I think so. Am I frozen on your end too, or is that just me?
Absolutely, you are frozen. That's just we got an error message now. I don't even react at this point because you being frozen is just typical.
You swing the transition and pull this solo.
You want me to just go solo the rest of the way here? So from the Tennessee side of things for me, when you look at the series in Lexington against Kentucky, we talked about how they're going to handle themselves. I think for me, that's going to be – I think they will, knowing Tony Vitello, knowing this team, they're going to come in with a chip on their shoulder. I would expect them to kind of pounce early, and I would really be surprised if they don't, just because I know, you know, that they are an offensive-built team. If they aren't coming out swinging with you know, Blake Burke and Kavars Tears and Billy Amick, I think they're going to really push Kentucky and see how if they can take that first blow, if they can come out and get on them early, have the first crack at it in all these games being the road team and kind of jumping out. They'll say, okay, let's see how you guys can handle this, because that's kind of what Tennessee does. They slug and they're going to try and outslug you. And then just same thing for them, in my opinion. It comes down to can they get the pitching – that they need to win series like this and continue to pitch deep. I think they're starting to find, you know, slot guys into the roles that they're comfortable in, and they're kind of finding a way. We've talked about AJ Causey, maybe putting him, having an opener before him and letting him throw those middle innings because he had really struggled in the early on in games. That might be key for them, and if they can continue to kind of ride that. And this, for me, is a huge Drew Beam weekend. Because coming into the year, you kind of looked at Drew Beam. He's been around the program for a while. He's a guy that you kind of looked at as, okay, he might be the at the front of this staff. They obviously started the year with AJ Russell and then lost him to injury. And Drew Beam has continued to pitch better. I think he's looked good. He's pitching to a 3-1-6 right now. If he comes out and kind of can set the tone in whatever game he goes in and can pitch them and give that offense some breathing room, for me, that's the biggest thing on the Tennessee side, because I really truly believe that their offense is going to score enough. It's just going to be, can they fend off a confident, feisty Kentucky bunch? Are you back?
I am back to the point of no camera.
Okay.
Shocker on the fact that as I was stressing about all this stuff of setting up the camera, that the batteries are the thing that gave out about at the end of the podcast. So we're going to go no video on my end as we talk about one of the few mid-major series that we've been able to talk about throughout this year, as the Louisiana Raging Cajuns are heading north to Conway, South Carolina, a week before our resident podcaster Dan Galati will be there, if I'm not mistaken. Nobody follow him there. I know he has so many fans in the Myrtle Beach area. You know, he would be down there for a great weekend series between the Raging Cajuns and the Chanticleers.
Hold on. It's less about that. I don't like, I would, if anybody were to ever in a million years know who I am, come say what's up. Never going to happen. I don't want you to follow me on this particular weekend because I'm going to be golfing, and that's just embarrassing.
God. The positive self-talk coming out of your end recently—it's just been.
I don't want anyone to see my golf swing. That's why that weekend's bad. Any other time, come say what's up. Feel free.
So, for anybody that hasn't been paying attention, the Raging Cajuns have been one of the best stories throughout the course of this year. Coach Deggs, who has a very fascinating and interesting background of how he ended up in Louisiana, he does a very good job with their offense. Former hitting coach at Texas A&M, really centered around, again, kind of what we talked about with Kentucky, of finding guys' strength and then being able to maximize their strength, quite frankly. And you can kind of see that with this club. And when you look at really any Coach Deggs offense, you're going to see guys that occasionally hit more extra base hits. You have the Connor Higgs and the Kyle DeBarge of the world. DeBarge has 12 home runs, hitting .346. And then you also have your speed guys. And then you have the guys that hit for average or all-around hitters. And you can kind of see that with this offense. But I think where this Louisiana team has made their money this season, obviously they're sitting currently at 29-9, 14-1 in Sunbelt play, as with a four-game winning streak right now, is on the mound. I mean, they're pitching to a 3-4-5 as a club right now. They have 384 strikeouts and 334 innings. Just a super impressive group on the mound with a ton of dudes that have showcased the abilities. I mean, the amount of guys that have meaningful innings. And again, usually when you see guys sub one, you know, it looks like usually like Maddux Mandino, who's pitched a third of an inning on the year and hasn't given up an earned run. But there's a lot of guys with meaningful innings counts that are all sub two and a lot more sub three. And it really doesn't start to stack up sub four at all. There's a ton of dudes that are sub four and it's deep. And the only guys that are above those numbers all don't have that many innings this year. So from the top to the bottom of what this group has to offer on the mound, they've got a lot to show and they're going to be tested this weekend. Obviously with what we know Coastal Carolina does as an offense.
Yeah, and really, since when you look at Louisiana, ever since they got swept in Houston by Vanderbilt, LSU in Houston, they've kind of just haven't looked back. And I think you just kind of nailed it when you're talking about their pitching staff. Like, that's what jumps out to you is when you look at how many guys they've used, how many guys have been so effective and that deep. And that's, you know, we talk about Clemson all the time. One of the things that we really like about them is how deep they can roll on the mound. And when you can have a deep bullpen like that, it just changes everything because you're so comfortable and confident and going to the next guy and not stretching guys further past the point of effectiveness, which happens a lot in college baseball because you don't trust all the guys down in the bullpen. It's really hard to have pitching depth. Louisiana has it. They also have, on top of it, like any good mid-major team does, they can mash against the competition they're playing every weekend, right? So I think that's what's been very impressive by them, but I can't help it. You know, I love Coastal. I love some of the guys, and it helps the ballpark they play in. But that Coastal offense, man, it just doesn't quit. If you're not frozen, you're on mute.
Wow.
There we go. It's hard. I can't tell if you're trying to talk or not. It's I got no camera. I'm talking to a black screen right now. It's fascinating.
Well, maybe if I'm going to take non-ownership of this problem. Maybe if Brady didn't bark every 3 seconds today because I'm the only one home and I'm not showing him any attention, so he's always at the door right now, I wouldn't have to mute my mic so much because this is the most I've muted my mic in a very long time. And I've muted my screen apparently as well because of technical difficulties.
We're a mess.
Let me ask you this question about Louisiana. I'm not saying they would have won a game that weekend in Houston, but do you think part of it is the fact that they've finally gotten a better understanding of these guys' roles as they've gotten into conference play? And maybe that's why they went down there. Like, I'm not saying this team is good, just an Omaha sleeper. I mean, they're an Omaha sleeper. Yes, definitely, because of how good they've been. But like a contender, a true contender that's going to beat an LSU or a Vanderbilt on any given weekend. But is there something to be said that maybe they just didn't have their pitching lined up for those weekends and now they finally got it rolling?
Without question. I mean, without question, right? And I think confidence too, right? We continue to talk about how important confidence is. And I think that they probably learned a lot about their team when you play that competition, that type of competition. And at the time, right, what did we think of LSU at the time? We thought a lot higher of LSU. Vanderbilt, obviously, we know is really good. They probably are a better team than Houston. So I just think that, yes, I mean, you played three really close ball games. Like, yes, you lost them all, but you lose 7-4 to Vanderbilt. You lose 5-4 to LSU. You lose 13-10 in extras to Houston. You're coming out of that weekend going, okay, we got something here. And then, like you said, then if as they build that confidence, then they find the roles of these guys and they've kind of slotted them in. And I think that was kind of just the takeoff point for them. And, yeah, if you ran that series back this weekend, do they go 2-1? They might. They might.
Yeah.
They might. If you told me they beat LSU and they beat Houston, lost to Vanderbilt, I wouldn't be too surprised.
Dan, get a load. When you were looking through the pitching stats, did she happen to catch LP Langevin's stats on the year?
I did. You're talking about 64 punches in 37 innings?
Is that yeah. Good? Yeah, I'm going to apologize to our listeners. We don't get eyes on teams a ton, so we haven't seen any of LP throwing this year. Oh, my gosh. And he's a Canadian. He's a Canuck.
Yeah.
from Quebec City, Quebec, from Wabash Valley Junior College. This is his first year on campus in Division I baseball, and he is punching tickets this year. My gosh, we got to get our eyes on some of him.
Yeah, we do.
Marshall, look at this, listen to this. 2 2/3, 7 punch outs. Look at that. Wow. Give me some LP Langevin. He's a guy that was built for Louisiana. You think he definitely speaks fluent French too, right?
You think he's a French Canadian? We're just gonna make up that he's a French Canadian without actually knowing.
He's from if there's any part of Canada Quebec that still speaks French, it's Quebec.
No question.
All right, yeah, so he definitely is. He was attracted to the French quarters of Louisiana. He loves his teammates Robichaud and Bordeaux and all of those guys. Obviously, Coastal, you mentioned the lineup and what they've been able to do. I think the surprising part for me is what Derek Bender has been this year. Now, whether that's because of just baseballing, which does have a tendency to happen to a lot of guys in different scenarios, but a lot of people expected more from him. So I don't know if it's just a matter of time before he gets going a little bit more. Again, 338 is nothing to slouch at. You can tell with his on base percentage, he's still getting on base, but the power numbers are not what you'd expect. But I mean, you mentioned it. This Coastal Carolina offense, they are the most fun to watch when they are rolling. You'd like to get more out of the pitching staff. We were a little bit fired up after that first weekend when Duke and George Mason came down and Indiana opened there. Hasn't trended in the right direction. We kind of haven't heard about Coastal Carolina a lot recently. It doesn't seem like they're playing their best baseball right now. But I definitely think that this is a lineup, A, you don't want to see at their park if you're Louisiana. But again, this is, what do they always say? Styles make fights. And if there's any series that has as much of a freaking styles that are interchanging and will make a perfect fight, it's going to be Louisiana's pitching staff versus Coastal Carolina's offense.
Yeah, and I think it's funny. You look at Coastal and the power's a little bit down than we're used to in some of the past years, but it's the same Gary Gilmore Coastal team that we've been seeing. Like, you look through the pitching and you try and find some guys that have been piecing together some decent years. They're in the fives or in the fours. There's a guy or two here in the threes, some guys who haven't thrown very much, maybe a little lower, but it's all a lot of like, and then you look at the offense and it's like, 412, 343, 338, 320, 317. Zach Beach is only hitting 279, but he's got 14 pump or 13 pumps. So it's just like, it's just such a Coastal. It's a typical Coastal team where they're going to be in a regional. They're going to have to hit their way through the regional and hope they get enough out of the arms. They can do it. Especially, I mean, we've seen them go on the runs. And I think the difference in the year that they won the national championship is they had more arms to get through it than we've seen since then. But yeah, like you said, styles make fights, and it'll be interesting because, you know, Louisiana's going to go up there. They have a bunch of guys who can punch tickets, and they have a ton of guys they can go to. If a guy doesn't have it, they can kind of turn the page quickly, which is, again, I think just such a massive advantage that a lot of teams don't have, especially in the Sun Belt, especially kind of across the country in college baseball, against a Coastal team that's so very comfortable at home.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. That is the last place. If they were playing in Louisiana, I think I'd have a different perspective of this series and what this would be. Any closing thoughts on those three series before we wrap it up with a trip around the country?
No. I mean, if you're a baseball fan, tune into Kentucky and Tennessee this weekend.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
No doubt. So in other notable matchups across the country, we, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, we have the University of North Carolina Tar Heels heading to NC State. Both teams are coming off midweek losses, so they're looking to bounce back. Number 7, Duke travels north to take on number 23, Virginia Tech. Number 15, Oklahoma State, who's been playing really good baseball, they head to Kansas State. Florida plays number 13, Vanderbilt, as they will head up to Nashville to take on that series. Number 2, Arkansas tries to rebound from their first series loss of the year as they travel east a long way to South Carolina, a nice little Thursday through Saturday series. And then Texas A&M is going to put the backside ground balls curse to test on the road against Alabama, as we have anointed them as potential contenders. That means you are automatically cursed, and we are going to put you at risk. So when Texas A&M loses this weekend, all you Aggie fans, since you're so loyal, come let us know. And the Longwood Pacers, big fan of the Longwood Pacers. Or are they the Racers?
Pacers.
Pacers. Yeah, hey, I'm a Pacer. Former Marywood Pacer here.
I think they're
the big fan of what they're doing. I think they've got a chance to be a national championship contender.
Yeah, Longwood. I just think what you're seeing there, and it's a big weekend for them. And I kind of like I feel like this is kind of a weekend where you go in and you handle business and you win three games.
Yeah, 100%. We're really putting the backside ground balls curse to test there, and we're gonna see if what happens. But thank you to our listeners for tuning in and bearing and having the patience to bear through this podcast. As we, if you're listening on audio form, you're probably like, I don't even know what he's talking about. If you're watching the YouTube videos, first off, click that subscribe button. I don't know why you wouldn't have already. I know we have listeners out there that tune into every episode, but you're not subscribed. Why not subscribe? If you're not subscribed on YouTube, go there. If you want to subscribe on any podcast platforms, head to Apple Pods, Spotify, and anywhere you find your podcast. We post episodes weekly, always hitting your feed at 7 a.m. sharp. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at BacksideGB, Instagram at BacksideGroundBalls, and TikTok at BacksideGroundBall. And most importantly, make sure you're sharing with five friends, and we'll see you next time on the Backside Ground Balls podcast.